We're doing our class on Pirkei Avot together with the Jewish home, and tonight I want to dedicate our learning to a special home out in Har Nof. There's a family who I've had opportunity to get to know, and some people here in the Machon have had opportunity to know, and their kindness really is the embodiment of what we're learning about. Hashem should bless the Fund family until 120, and we should only hear good news and share good news. We're up to the first chapter, the sixth Mishnah. Yehoshua ben Prachya and Nitai Harbeli kibelu mehim. Yehoshua, the son of Prachya and Nitai Harbeli, they received the oral tradition from Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan, the aforementioned Tanag. Yehoshua ben Prachya omer. So Yehoshua ben Prachya says, Asei lecha. Asei lecha rav. That's an interesting way of wording it. And the wording literally means, make for yourself a rabbi. And the question is, what does that mean? So Maimonides explains that even if he isn't the biggest person in town, he's not the biggest person you ever met in your life, but you need to have someone who you learn from. You can't just rely on yourself to learn. So he's bigger than you, you could learn from him. Learn from him. Others explain that it means try to have one rabbi who you walk in his footsteps. You shouldn't be shopping around learning one day from this guy, one day from this guy. A person should try to have one rabbi who is his prime teacher. When we speak about the Jewish home, so very often I encourage people, take a rabbi. Take a rabbi your wife is comfortable with. Most of the questions of the home pertain to her more than they pertain to you. And you have to have a rabbi. It also avoids conflict. I was once sitting in a Beis Medrash, and one big rabbi was talking to another big rabbi, and he said, I don't understand. My kids had an halachic question, and I hear my own kids going to the phone and calling a rabbi. And I know that rabbi. When he has a question, he calls me. So how come they're asking him and they're not asking me? So he says, if that bothers you, my kids call a rabbi, and he looks it up in my book to answer them. sometimes in one's own home, there's a feeling that people don't want him to be the rabbi of the house. It could be one's own children, it could be one's spouse, and sometimes it's very frustrating. So a person has to know that don't be frustrated. The Talmud tells us there were rabbis in the time of the Talmud whose wives would send out their questions. They were concerned their husbands were too stringent. We have to try and remove religious pressure from the home. And one of the ways to do that is to have an external body who the questions go to. I anticipate, I'm not only blessing you, but I anticipate that I will see quite a few of you being bona fide rabbis, people who are qualified to answer halachic questions. And I don't think it's beyond this group. There's a lot of talent here. And even though I hope you will answer other people's questions, in your own home you have to remember that sometimes it's better to have someone else be the rabbi. We're all partial. And if someone tells us a word of criticism, so the truth is beyond the point. No one cares. The truth is that it hurts. And we can't be so impartial ourselves to think, well, they're right. It really should be different. When it comes to halacha, we'd like to think that it's impartial, and that our spouses will view it that way, and our kids will view it that way, and that we're just giving them the honest to goodness answer. But the truth is that people don't view it that way. Not the people that are close to you. So don't be offended by it. Recognize that that's a fact. It's a fact of life. And asei lecha rav. Make for yourself a rabbi. There's nothing bad about it. There's everything good about it. This is even if you're the rabbi. So take someone else who you send your questions to. Find someone who you could ask. So that's one interpretation in the Mishnah, that make for yourself a rabbi. And it really takes out a lot of the pressure from the home. Because like a couple could be discussing, well, she wants to be stringent in this area, he wants to be lenient in that area. And then who calls the shot? So instead of having it a bargaining table, you know, he wants to be stringent on this, you got to be lenient on that. And back and forth, that's not the way it should look. So it helps if a couple has someone who they could outsource their questions to. And even if you guys have learned it all and you know it all, I could tell you, I'm not embarrassed to say it, in my house I try not to answer any halachic questions. I try not to. Because I'm aware of this. Even though questions are posed to me, I say, let me call, I'll ask. I don't like answering. And I could tell you that I learned this from Rabbi Avram Shapiro, the chief rabbi of Israel. He, when he had questions in his own house, so he'd call the rabbi two flights up from him. He'd tell his wife, let's call him and ask him if the pot is kosher. So Rabbi Magnus, who lives two flights up from him, tells the story that Rabbi Avram Shapiro's wife gave him calls him, and she says, I have a question about a pot. So he says, just saying, I'll come right down. He comes in. And he asks Rabbi Shapiro, is everything okay? He says, yeah, I hear the details from the Rebbetzin. So Rabbi Magnus hears the details, and then he says, well, just a second. He goes to her husband, who's his own teacher. He himself learned under Rabbi Shapiro, and he says, well, I think because of this, and because of that, and because of the other thing, we could say it's permitted. So Rabbi Shapiro says, yeah, I thought so too. So Rabbi Magnus says, okay, so you don't want to tell your wife that? So Rabbi Shapiro says, no, you tell her. So here you're talking about the chief rabbi of Israel, Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz Zerah. And he passed the buck, you know, and even though it was someone who was his own student. So a person has to try and be modest within his own home. Even if you know the answer, what's wrong with calling? It doesn't cost money. And at the end of the day, you gain that you're not the one that said what no one wanted to hear. Meaning, Rabbi Moshe Halberstam, his Yahrzeit was just a few weeks ago. He once got a frantic phone call a half hour before Shabbos. A woman was transferring her cholent to the hot plate, and she tripped, and the cholent spilled into the fish. So now you're not supposed to eat fish and meat together. The Talmud says it can endanger a person. It could cause a person to have tzaras. So we don't know what that means. We haven't seen anyone with tzaras, and we haven't seen any correlation between this and that. But at any rate, that's what it says in the Talmud. So it also says it in Halacha. So she calls him up, this woman, and she says, Rabbi, is there any way I could serve the fish tonight? You know, what's Shabbos without fish? So Rav Halberstam says, no, I'm sorry. According to what it says in Talmud, you can't serve it. Send it to the cats or whatever, but you can't eat it. And 15 minutes later, there's a knock on the woman's door. Rav Halberstam sent her his fish for Shabbos. So I'm not saying you should outsource your questions to get other people's fish. But at the end of the day, if her own husband would have said, no, there's no way we could eat that fish on Shabbos, so I'm not sure the wife would have been so happy about it. That's the answer at the end. It's always easier to hear it from someone outside. So the first thing we learned, Yoshua ben Prachya told us, is asei lecha rav. Make for yourself a teacher. And we will see this will be said over again throughout the Masechet. And there are different interpretations as we go along, and we'll expand those when we get there. And the second thing that Yoshua ben Prachya teaches us is Knei lecha chaver. Acquire for yourself a friend. Acquire for yourself a friend. So yeah, it requires investment. And sometimes people think that if they're married, they don't need friends of their own gender. It's not true. Did we discuss this? I discussed this with someone. Did we do this Mishnah here before? Yeah. I don't know. Okay. The Mishnah says, judge every person favorably. And our sages say this applies to a person who is, who you have reason to judge him favorably. Someone who you don't think he's a bad person. But if you've met someone who you know is a bad person, so then you don't have this Mishnah. The Mishnah that doesn't apply. Now, the truth is that very often what happens in the beginning of marriage is that people are convinced they married a bad person. And this can happen at different points in marriage. It doesn't have to happen in the beginning, but it usually does. When you're suddenly in close proximity with someone, so you'll see all their blemishes much bigger. And you can think rationally why it's true. You know, they do leave the milk on the counter every night and have to buy a new bag of milk, right? It's a fact, right? So firstly, we have to know that Chazal tell us what we see is a reflection of ourselves when it comes to within the home. We tend to see a reflection of ourselves. We might not see it, but Chazal said we see in others what we ourselves lack. And as much as we can cover it up with logic, at the end of the day, people who have experienced it know it. And if you haven't experienced it, you just probably haven't noticed it. But it's there. It's like the husband who was yelling at his wife, "Why are you yelling at me?" Right? You know the husband who says, "I am not stubborn." But that's the way we all are. We're all that way. So, I think that this Mishnah definitely applies within the home. And I remember giving examples for this Mishnah, so I'm pretty sure we did this. By judging favorably, the two siblings, the husband and the wife, she woke him up. No? Didn't we do this Mishnah? We did this Mishnah. We did this Mishnah. Okay. Nitai Arbeli Omer. Nitai from the city of Arbel. He says, and maybe we did this Mishnah too, yeah. Distance yourself from a bad neighbor. Don't connect with an evil person. Did we do this one? Binyamin, Zion, we also did what I'm doing now. And don't be.
I know it's saying that judge the other person favorably, but that just might be because I didn't have anything like that.
Okay. Okay, so I assume we're up to Mishnah Zion. Nitai from the city of Arbel, he says, distance yourself from a bad neighbor. The Mishnah is not only saying don't connect him. The Mishnah says distance yourself from him. We tend to learn from our surroundings. And it doesn't matter how big you are, every person is affected by their surroundings. Our sages tell us that it works in a global sense, meaning even the giants of the Jewish people are affected by all of the Jewish people. To the extent that Chazal say, in Hillel's time, you had many sages who were worthy of prophecy, but they couldn't get it because the people weren't on that level, the Jewish people at large. And our sages say that individuals are very heavily affected by their neighbors. Korach got the neighboring people involved in his argument. The Navi Yirmiyahu, said, I wish I could go live in the desert because I know it's hard to live among people who are evil, among people who are bad. If you're going to have a roommate who swears a lot, the next time you bang your finger, you're going to want to swear. That's just the way it works. If you watch movies where people talk in a certain way, so much of our culture is mimicking what they see in the movies. And people are just reliving the scenes they see on TV. They're reliving it in the way they react to one another, and they're reliving it even in their relationships, in the homes that they're building. Rav Pessin Zatzal told me, and this goes back at least a decade ago, probably more, probably a decade and a half ago, he said, one of the most difficult things that we're contending with today is that society is building their homes, the Jewish society is building their homes, mimicking what they see on TV. So people don't even realize it. One of the greatest gifts you guys are getting at Machon Meir is the fact that you don't have TV here. I'm serious, I'm not joking. It gives you a chance to develop who you really are, and when a person is constantly growing up in the shadows of the latest Seinfeld, or I don't even know what people are watching today, I don't know if he's still on. It's not before your time, right? You guys know what that is. So that affects a person. The sarcasm that we have today, when I was a kid, that wasn't the way people joked. All of our humor has changed. And when we say distance yourself from a bad neighbor, there are many things that can be a bad neighbor. It could be the person who is your friend on Facebook today. You know, if I told you there's this big man who's dripping sweat and he talks like this, none of you would want to talk to him or bring him into your house, right? But when you turn on your TV and you could just put on the sports and you see all these people who are like gorillas, and you know they're like gorillas because they're on the news all the time for all the violent things they've been doing. And then you see the interviews and you say, wait a second. So you're exposing your kids to them and you'd never invite to your house. You would never tell your children, talk to this person. Quite the contrary. If he'd knock at the door, you'd say, I'm not home, right? You wouldn't let him in. But
home.
What? Yeah, but we're exposing our kids whether we like it or not, and we're exposing ourselves to a style which has nothing to do with the real world. And I'm not even talking from a religious perspective. If I grew up, and I grew up with Mike Day, everyone knew I want to be like Mike. You guys remember that ad? I want to be like Mike. And I never followed basketball, but I knew who Michael Jordan was. Michael Jordan, yeah. Everyone wanted to be like Mike, whether you liked it or not. Your cereal said, I want to be like Mike. Your sneaker said, I want to be like Mike. Everything said, I want to be like Mike. It was...
They made a movie about it.
Okay.
Two.
Huh?
Two.
Okay. So... We have to stop and think what we're letting into our homes and what we're letting into our minds, and how much of ourselves is coming out and how much of what's coming out is what we've seen. Chazal said, distance yourself from a bad neighbor. And the simple meaning is, you see a bad neighbor, he's going to drop garbage on your lawn. What are you going to do, Venture? You're going to start dropping garbage on his lawn. He's going to be... treating you and behaving in ways that are unkind. And at the end of the day, we learn from our surroundings. Chazal said, distance yourself from that. And Chazal also warned us. When the mafia comes and shoots up his house, they don't always keep the bullets in one house. Chazal warned us. When a person chooses his setting and his neighbors, Chazal say that when we have the procession of a sota, so one of the things we do is we interview her. And we tell her, Halbe shchinim ra'im osim. We tell her, listen here, lady, we don't have any witnesses. Why should you die over this? You guys know what the sota waters are? Everyone here knows what it is? No. Okay, so it says in the Torah that if a husband sees that his wife is overly friendly with another man, he could tell her, do me a favor, don't be alone with him. If after his warning she's alone with him again, and we have witnesses, so then he takes her to court, and she says, look, I asked you not to be alone with him. You were alone with him. Did something improper happen there? If she insists she's innocent, so the Torah says God wants to remove any doubt from his heart. So God says that he will allow his name to be erased into waters. They take her up to the Temple Mount, and over there, again, they interview her, and we'll go back to that interview in a minute. And if she insists, nothing improper happened, nothing, I'm clean. I never slept with him, I never slept with any other man that I was prohibited from sleeping with. So then we try to convince her to admit, because if she won't admit, then she drinks these waters, and God says, my name is erased into that water, and I will verify. If she really committed adultery, then she will die in a natural death. And if she did not commit adultery, then she will be blessed, and she'll have beautiful children, and her husband has to forget the whole affair, and it's over. So when we interview her, one of the things we tell her is, look, people have made mistakes in life. Why should you die over this? We don't have witnesses. We don't know what happened. But if you did commit adultery, let's just end it now. You'll get divorced and you'll start a new life. But don't die over this. And one of the things we tell her is, harbe shchenim ra'im osim. Many things can happen when you have a bad neighbor. Maybe you do have a seductive neighbor. Maybe he has been keeping his eye out on you. And maybe something happened. The line is, "Alve shchenim ra'im osim." Bad neighbors can do a lot. So, this is a fact of life. A bad neighbor is a threat to who we will evolve into becoming, and it's also something which affects our children and can potentially even affect the the faithfulness of one's marriage. So you guys are probably wondering, he's off the wall. But you're all polite, no one's saying that. So when you have a chance, go look at the statistics of how many couples in the United States have cheated on one another. And where does that cheating come in? Usually it's not a stranger. It's not someone they picked up at a bar. It's usually, you know, we're talking well over 50%. And we're talking about the number of people who admit to cheating on their spouses.
50%?
Go look. Look at the stats online.
50% of married people?
Look at the stats. Don't take my word for it. Go check. It's that guy in the office.
How's it checked?
No, these are people who admit. That's what I'm saying. You'll see the number of people who admit. You have to always add to that number, because obviously there are a lot of people who would not admit to a fault. But look, this statistic goes back a few years. I'm sure things have improved since then, right? But at the end of the day, so then it was, in our day and age, it might be a coworker, it might be someone else in the office. Chazal said, be careful and distance, one should distance oneself from someone bad. And bad could be in many ways. Yes?
At some point that could get difficult. For instance, when you just mentioned a coworker, you don't always have the choice of which, you know, where you're going to work and moving within what company, what team you're going to be on. And sometimes it's difficult if you're in a situation where you're compelled to be in proximity or to have some kind of interaction with someone for parnasa. You know, it's not such a simple thing, almost a distance. Maybe there's a sense that it's implied that maybe it also extends to some kind of metaphorical distance. That you don't, it doesn't mean you have to pack up and leave to a different company, but you keep your conversations short or you somehow minimize them.
Okay, in each case, and sometimes you search for another job till you can find it. Sometimes that is a good reason. It depends on what's going on. You know, the Talmud tells us that there was a rabbi who used to sell shoes to the women. So one time the women decided they're going to start up with him. So he was up in the high floor, and he realized what was happening. So he turned around and took a leap out of the window. So Elio came running and caught him. And Elio said, you know how far I was? You know how much I had to run to catch you here? So the rabbi says, well, help me out. I can't make 2 cents, and I have to deal with women all day selling shoes. Why am I in this rut in the first place? Help me out. So Elio said, you know, you got a point. You got a point. Let me talk to God. And then they did something, and he became wealthy, and it worked out. So you see, yeah, this rabbi also, you know, there's the famous story of Rav Mordechai Yaffe, who compiled the Levush.
What?
He compiled a work called the Levush. He was a disciple of the Rama, Rav Moshe Yisraelis and Shulchan Aruch. And he also, he was summoned by a wealthy woman, and he was an exceptionally handsome man. That's why the family name is Yaffe, like Yaffe, beautiful. And he also saw where things were headed. And he also took a dive out the window, only he landed in the septum. The septum, he got covered with dung and everything else that they had out there. And she wasn't so interested after that. Sometimes a person, but how many stories are there of people who did not jump out the window? We don't always hear about those, and sometimes we do. So, Archek Mishachen Ra, one is supposed to distance oneself from a bad neighbor, and this is a point again which I've said time and again, and I'm going to keep hammering it in, and I hope you guys believe me. If there's one thing that guys in Machon Meir err in after they finish in Machon Meir, it's that they don't go and choose good neighborhoods. They figure, I grew up without any Orthodox Judaism and I made it okay. And then they go back out there and they end up hurting themselves and their families. And a person has to not only distance oneself from a bad neighbor, a person has to find a good neighborhood where it will support his growth. The next thing he told us was, Ve'al titchabar la'rasha. And a person should not connect himself to the wicked. The first neighbor was Shachen Ra, a bad neighbor. He's a person who's bad to his fellow man. He's evil. The second person is a Rasha. Rasha, linguistically, Rasha is a person who he might be very nice to you, but he's wicked between himself and God. Rasha, by definition, is between man and God. Ra is between man and his fellow man. Ra is a person who's evil to his fellow man, and Rasha is a person who in his performance of mitzvot or in his performance of averot is bad. Yes.
Concerning living in a Jewish neighborhood or a religious neighborhood, there are certain areas that are mixed. For example, why you should be more mixed.
I think that what a person has to check is there are a few questions. Number one is, what education will he have for his children? And you have to ask yourself about what will my kids, how will they grow? And my question is more, who will their friends in school be? Who will their teachers be? What level will they be learning on? I don't need them to be geniuses in Torah and Talmud. I don't believe any school produces geniuses. Those that try kill the kids, and those that don't might actually produce good kids. I don't believe in all these schools that they're going to produce the geniuses of the next generation. I haven't seen any of them work. So all I've seen them do is ruin kids, like hurt kids. That's not my point. But I think if you have a good, decent, normal school, where a kid can have decent friends, and decent friends are decent people. I'm not gauging where every person is, but if your friend is going home and he's seeing that every week his friend's mother has another boyfriend in the house, that's not what you want him growing up with. I feel bad for his friend, but you want to give him a sense of normalcy. If you're in a community, like unfortunately there are communities where it's acceptable that two women are living together and they adopt a child and they bring him up as his two moms, that's not what you want to expose your child to. So when you're telling me a mixed community, it depends a little bit on what type of mixed community. Here in this community, we're a mixed community. And we have guests over from the neighborhood also who they don't keep Shabbos in their own home, but they come to us and we have a nice relationship. And I think a person has to try and be warm to everyone in his surroundings, but not at the expense of his own education. Meaning, at the same time, one's children should have friends who at least the majority of the friends are at least in a direction you want to go. And this becomes more relevant as time goes on. When the kid is 5, see, he doesn't know the difference. When the kid is 10, then he starts asking questions. When the kid is 13, then they're trying to educate him. And then you're entering big challenges. There's a rabbi who helped us out a lot with choosing which institutions to send our kids to. And I met him a few weeks ago, and he said to me, "Are you davening over your kids' education?" So I said, "Yeah." So he said, "There's one thing you got to daven about, that they should have good friends. We daven every morning. You shouldn't have a bad friend. You have to add one for each of your kids. Daven that they shouldn't have a bad friend. because when it comes to the education of your kids, one bad friend is like a rotten apple in a pack of apples. It's very quick to spread around. He's just educating everyone else. Look at what I see you could do with firecrackers. Look at the magazines I found. Look what I found online. Look at the drugs I found. You know, we live in a day and age where all around us, there's everything you can dream and even things you wouldn't dream of. And not like you have to go to downtown. Here. I went to a high school principal. This goes back about 7 years ago. I used their facilities and I smelled drugs. So I waited around and the guy who was using it waited longer than I could wait. So I'm standing outside waiting, and after like a half hour, you know, I gotta go. I'm not gonna sit there and wait in a half hour to see who the guy is. So I go to the principal. I got a meeting with him. I said, do you know that there's likely to be drugs in your school? And this was one of the top schools in the country, like top religiously. So he said to me, look, the way the statistics run, they're talking about a statistic where, according to the statistics, my school is supposed to have about 10 kids doing drugs. That's a statistic in the state of Israel. If you ask me, do I really think I have kids doing drugs in my school? So my logic says I must have, but my heart says, no, I don't have. But I understand logically, if that's the statistic here in Israel, then I can't deny my logic because my heart would like to think I know my boys, and I don't think any of them are doing drugs. That was his answer to me. And this is, I don't know, there might be one or two better high schools than this one, but it's one of the top. So your kids are going to be exposed to it as it is. When you choose a neighborhood, you want to choose a neighborhood where you can at least have what to choose from that's positive. What are your kids going to, where are they going to daven? And what kind of supermarket even are they going to buy in, you know? I don't care specifically. It's not only a matter of religious or not religious. You can go to Kiryat Yovel, which is a community where you have mixed everything. Haredi, Datilumi, those keeping mitzvot, those not yet keeping mitzvot. And they all live in peace together. And a community like that, where you have the institutions you need, and your kids can have good friends and things like that, I don't think a person should say, I need a community that's homogeneous, just in my little bubble, everyone's just like me. I don't think so. I don't think that's healthy either. It's one of the reasons I'm here. Because I want my kids to be exposed to everything, not to be in this little homogeneous bubble. I don't think that's right either. But the question is what the ratio is. And, you know, I used to live in a building where every night we'd hear husbands yelling at their wives. And I asked my wife, is this how we want our kids to grow up? You know, we're living here. We know who they are. We hear what they're yelling. So that was also in a community where everything's mixed. But these were the sound effects we were getting. We'd wake up in the morning and hear the yelling. We'd go to sleep at night, we'd hear the yelling. I remember moving into the apartment we're in now and waking up in the morning and hearing a parent say with his son, Mode ani lefanecha. And I was like, wow, I'm in the Garden of Eden. Where's all the yelling I used to hear? It affects you. It affects you. It affects your kids. But I don't think it has to be homogeneous. I think what you have to check is the school system and the shul. And then the community that you and your wife will have, which is also very important. Where will it pull you, up or down? And another thing to factor in is that some people thrive with freedom. And I get a feeling that a lot of people in Mechon Meir are that way. Meaning, some people, if you put them in a society where they feel that they're being stifled, they're going to rebel. So sometimes you need a certain amount of freedom just so you don't rebel. Okay, if you move into a community where they tell you no TV, you might think you're moving a step up. But what might happen a year later is that you'll pull out and say, I'm getting a TV and I'm getting a big screen and I'm meaning sometimes you can't stifle yourself. You guys are in a growing process. You get a positive community, but I'm not sure that you should get a stifling community. I think that's equally important. You don't want to have a reaction to what you're encountering. And it doesn't have to be the rules of the community. It could also be the attitude of the community. And if you're in a community where you'll get comments about all kinds of things you and your wife and your kids do, which you'll get anywhere you live in Israel. The question is the amount. You know, so then that's also something to factor. You know, but anywhere you live, you know, I walk out with my daughter. Why don't you put a sweater on her? Put a sweater. Don't you think you're stifling her? You know, every two footsteps, there's another grandmother who's telling you what you should be doing. Why is she in the carriage? Why aren't you holding her? Why aren't you holding her? Shouldn't she be learning to be in the carriage? You know, everyone knows what's better for your kids than you. Okay. Ve'al titiyesh min hapuranut. And don't give up from bad things happening, which is an attitude. People think that that you reach a plateau, that life is about reaching that stage where you live happily ever after. And psychologists today attribute it to the fairy tales we hear as children, that they always end with, and they lived happily ever after, but there is no such concept. In Judaism, we always say, life is about continued growth. Well, if life is about continued growth, then you have to continually deal with challenges. So the Mishnah warns us, don't assume that nothing bad is going to happen now. Now you could rest. It doesn't happen. Life is never about that. Life is about challenges and dealing with them. And we shouldn't be taken by surprise when that happens. And we shouldn't let us knock us down. The Mishnah says, don't give up. The key in life isn't always to succeed. The key in life is sometimes not to give up. You guys catch that? Sometimes it's about the struggle. It's not about necessarily overcoming. It's stay in the fight. And with time, you know, you'll move forward. And marriage is like that too. You never hit a plateau. Someone once said, you know, we say the famous Medrash, Roman matron once asked one of the rabbis, what's God been doing since creation? So he said, God's been making matching pairs, husbands and wives. So people think God is making new shidduchim. And the truth is that every shidduch needs God's help every day to make it work all over again. It's not like you have it, that's it. You'll be married 5 years, now that's it. You figured one another out, now it's going to work. Nope. 6 years is going to have its challenges, and when you hit the 8th year, that's going to have its challenges, and the 10th year has its challenges. And life is about continued growth, and life is about continued challenges. And the same thing with kids. You're never going to have a time when you could sit back and say everything's okay. You know, when a kid's born, you're asking yourself, is he gaining enough weight? Is he eating enough? Is he developing enough? Then he grows a little bit more, and your questions are, how is he socially? And then he's more, and how's he in his learning? And then each stage with it, its things. I'm sorry, but